it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Friday, hey kids, it's the bonus show.
Oh, man. Here we go. Some audio?
Let's hear some audio.
Let's start with audio. It's Friday. We're lazy. Let somebody else do the work for us.
All right. If he's not willing to remove those gags and let those women and maybe those men talk, then he is disqualified from being president of the United States.
Ooh, Biden piling on too.
How can you run against Donald Trump when you have, what is it, 10, 12, 14? NDAs, and we asked them last night, will you free up those women and say, it's okay, you can now talk? What'd he say? He said, well, they don't want to. Just say, okay, let them make a decision to talk.
Ooh, so the pounding on continues. We talked about that yesterday. We'll talk about it again today. Meanwhile, across the country, the president with I'll say this last but not least, and I'm doing this just because I want to get a reaction from you.
Yeah, okay.
Because we love the rallies. Here we go. All right.
We're defending your right to keep the doctor and to keep the plan of your choice. Remember President Obama 28 times. He said, keep your doctor, keep your plan. Keep your doctor, keep your plan. Keep your doctor, keep your plan, right? It was a lie. We should impeach him.
Oh, thank you for listening, Mr. President.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. I love it.
I mean, it was an interesting day yesterday. Post-debate analysis coming up. Is I'm an apologizing billionaire a good political strategy? It's something that we talked about last night, and I noticed that narrative from a lot of different people in the media yesterday saying, you know, what you're spent now, what, $400 million? And your strategy is I'm a billionaire and I apologize for everything that I've ever done.
Yeah.
And you're running as a Democrat and you think that's a good policy. I'm thinking that some of the looks that you got, remember some of the weird looks where he was a deer in the headlight?
Yeah, right.
I don't think that it was, I don't know how to respond to this. I think it was, wow, I've spent $400 million, and this is what's left.
No, look, I mean, the arrogance of Michael Bloomberg is very clear. We've all seen it play out how many times over the years. He thinks he's the king. Think about a guy who thinks this way, who says we need to tax the poor more and it's a good thing because they'll just do stupid things with their money.
They haven't even had to go to that yet.
No.
About that. They're sitting there going, no, let's keep that one, Biden and Warren and Klobuchar and Buttigieg. No, let's keep that one in the side pocket here.
Exactly.
We'll use that one right before Super Tuesday. You know, this is the guy that says we should tax the poor because we should hurt the poor.
Yeah.
Because if we don't hurt the poor, they're going to take that money and they're going to spend it on dangerous things because the poor are a bunch of idiots. And so we need to take their money.
You know, the rumor is, I don't know if this is true or not. The rumor is Michael Bloomberg he just loves salt. He just puts a ton of salt on his food. Now, he's the same guy that wanted to, you know, ban salt shakers in restaurants. Of course, he would have his own.
Well, probably
as a personal chef.
Probably because he understood he was addicted to salt.
Exactly. He's got an addiction.
If I'm addicted to salt, everybody else must be.
They must be. It is, you know, but I don't know where you go if you're Michael Bloomberg. He picked up three more congressional endorsements. So representative from California, one from New York, one from Jersey. It was announced just yesterday morning, right after our show ended. It came out. So that brings his total of congressional endorsements to 15. Now, they announced the endorsements, you know, at I think it was 6 a.m. Eastern or 7 a.m. Eastern, somewhere around there. You know those came across before the debate. Those endorsements mm-hmm. were given before the debate. Yeah. You think anybody is regretting those endorsements?
We'll have a story on that I saw on thehill.com coming up here. But you see Warren's pounding on Bloomberg. You see the Politico story. We'll get to that, too, that Bloomberg's plan for a brokered convention. That's where he's heading and already lobbying to different Democrats in order to get that. Latest polls as the Nevada caucuses right around the corner here. Is Russia really backing a second Trump presidency? That story yesterday, I agree with Trey Gowdy. Mm. I don't think so.
No.
I don't know where that, you know, that story, and everybody had it yesterday, that the president not pleased that the House Intelligence Committee was briefed by intelligence committees that the Russians are favoring Trump. I would sit there and say, can I see your sources?
Right.
Because I don't agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think the Russians believe that they'd be able to manipulate any Democrat right now that's sitting there on stage last night.
Oh, yeah.
More than they could ever manipulate Trump based on what Trump has done already as president.
Yeah.
So wow. we'll get to that coming up. I saw that and I went, eh. No, I don't think so. And the win goes to Steve Scalise.
Wow.
On the Bernie Bro narrative that Keith Ellison, who is now Minnesota Attorney General, used to be, what, deputy head of the DNC?
Right.
Yesterday stuck his head out of the sand, tweeted something stupid, and probably won't be heard again, you know, from again for a while as he was just pounded. We'll get to that here. Record ratings for the debate.
Yeah,
interesting. And that's really interesting because there must have been a lot of excitement. Let's see what Bloomberg does. You know, let's see what Bloomberg now. This is the first one. Let's watch it. Whoa.
We got a fresh 538 forecast.
Yo, a fresh 538.
It's less than 30 minutes old. You want to hear it now?
Yeah, I normally we could. That's something we could tease and say, we'll have that coming up following the bottom of the hour, but everybody would just rush to the internet anyway, so yeah, you might as well do it now.
Yeah. How dare you rush to the internet, listeners. Listeners. Okay, so here we go. Brokered convention, 42% chance. Sanders, 35%
Whoa!
Chance.
That's the biggest lead
this
for
is
brokered
the,
convention.
Yes. Biden. 1 in 8, a 12% chance. Bloomberg, an 8% chance. Where are we at? Buttigieg at a 1% chance. Warren at a 1% chance.
You know, this is better than sports.
No, it is.
It's better than
seriously
predicting who's going to win the game. It's
well,
like,
you know, I guess the bookies out in Vegas take the odds on this. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, man.
Wow.
This is pretty incredible. Now, what you can't factor in is how much steam or energy that Bernie is gaining. The question is he gaining? If he is, then that gives him a chance of getting to that 1991 magic number.
Well, latest poll from Nevada shows he's, you know, you've got two polls now of him 30 or over.
Yeah.
So that's and remember the momentum that comes with that, even though
right.
it is Nevada, it would be another win for Bernie at that, you know, at that point.
Right.
I guess we won't be able to see it. I'm probably to the beginning of next week, but you know, you and I are both looking for. Everybody's looking for the polls of, you know, what's Bloomberg going to look like now, and then there's a debate next week before South Carolina. You know,
right?
Another debate, and yeah. Bloomberg's like, well, okay, I'm ready for this. How do you change the narrative?
Well, there's no way. I mean, honestly, there's no way. You're up against the ropes, and you're just getting hit and hit and hit and hit. There's no way to get out.
You and Warren, you know, coming out with the contract that she's going to offer to Bloomberg that can get the women out of the non-disclosure agreements.
Wow, yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
it's
right.
It's like you can't win this. But what sits in my mind is. You spent $400 million on this.
Mm-hmm.
400 million. We're just to March. No, excuse me. We're not to the end of February.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a leap year. I mean, you look at this situation with 538. Again, this is the latest update on the forecast. But you know the newest polls have been factored in.
Mm-hmm.
And if they've been factored in.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
You know, if they've been factored in and Bernie drops and brokered convention goes up.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Because it was 40-37 when we left here yesterday morning.
Yep.
And now 42-35. Here's what they're seeing. You're not going to have Bloomberg's likely not going to drop out. You know, the idea that, you know, that he would like a brokered convention. Biden's not going anywhere. He has enough money to get through March. Sanders obviously isn't going anywhere. And you have Warren, and if you have Warren and Buttigieg and they drop out, Buttigieg probably, some of his might go to Bernie, but probably going to go to Biden. And Warren's support will go to Bernie. It's that three-way split, and Bloomberg becomes the spoiler. Honestly, they get to a brokered convention, it's going to be crazy.
Well, I think what you're seeing is, and we didn't see it until really the debate last night, you're seeing the anger.
Yeah.
You're seeing the fury that, and there's a significant portion, and I would dare say that you could make the case that the majority of Democrats right now are furious that they've got a candidate, Bloomberg, who's attempting to buy the election because he's a billionaire.
Right. Wow. And he's not going anywhere. He won't be out before the end of March. Biden's not going anywhere. I'd be surprised, actually, if Mayor Pete or Elizabeth Warren went anywhere before the end of March.
And if you get to that point to the end of March, for all intents and purposes, you've got a brokered convention if everybody stays in.
The brunt of those 39-79 is the number of delegates. And the brunt of those are come down in March.
Go to 538. What's the estimated number of delegates that Sanders would get?
1555.
So we're under 1600 now.
Yeah, and he's been right at that. It floated between like 1575 and 15, but now it's at 1555. And so the estimate for Bloomberg is that he'll actually barely beat Biden, that he'll get 878, and that Biden will get 877. Buttigieg will have 300. Warren will have 222. Klobuchar will have 122. Klobuchar will be out. I suspect after Super Tuesday, she's done. But I don't think any of the other five will be.
That's a great point.
Because the brunt of all those delegates are going to happen, and we'll know by the end of March about a brokered convention or not. We'll know because either someone will hit that 1991 magic number or they won't, and it will probably happen in March. If I remember correctly, the states that are left after March, it's somewhere, I think, around 1,200. I'll go get the number, but they're not huge Bernie. He's gonna get some of those delegates after March, but Biden will also get some of those. They're in the Midwest.
And also coming up, the Roger Stone sentence, and okay, Boomer, it is. Actually, will be tomorrow, the 40th anniversary of the greatest American sporting event ever.
Mm.
And it was voted that way, too.
Yeah, right.
That and more on the way. And I say okay, Boomer, because, you know, you sort of have to be a boomer to really remember it well.
I'm not a boomer. I remember it.
Okay. Well, but you're right on the verge of a boomer.
Now, you got to be stupid to be a boomer. You'd have to be an idiot to be born during that period. Really.
And plus your calls and comments. It is the Friday Show, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Toronto Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90 Red Eye. So, looking at the latest poll from Nevada, the Emerson poll, the KLAS Emerson poll, which was taking the 19th and the 20th.
Hmm.
Okay, so you're talking that 2-day span, which would probably have been just before the, you know, the debate.
Right.
And Sanders 30, Biden, or Buttigieg 17, Biden 16, Warren 12, Steyer 10, Klobuchar with 11. And that follows that poll that was done just before that, the Data for Progress poll that showed Sanders at 35 and Buttigieg at 15, Warren at 16, and Biden at 14. So I guess the point would be in those two polls, and the Data for Progress poll had a huge sample, too, by the way, of likely voters. But you have the probably two of the last polls going into it, which shows Sanders at 30. Nobody else is over 20.
Yeah, wow.
Nobody else is over 17 in either of those polls. So if it goes the way that we think it's going to go, I mean, granted, you're going to have the like you do in the caucuses, the second round of voting.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you have, you know, Klobuchar, Steyer and Warren, that none of them have over 15 and those votes can go elsewhere at that particular point. If you're looking at the last poll, even Buttigieg may be in there because in the one poll, he only has 15. You know, where do all of those votes go?
Right.
Because you start, would they go to Biden or would they go to Sanders? And so could it be closer in Nevada? Could Biden pick up, especially in the second round of voting? Now, the problem is, from what we've heard, if you do the early voting, that's the final vote for you.
Right. Well, it will be interesting, looking at where the delegates are and what states, for Nevada, they have 36 delegates. Super Tuesday will be interesting between Texas and California. Texas could go to Biden. It could go to Bernie. Some of the polls, I think, is it only the one poll where Bernie was leading in Texas? The Texas Tribune poll?
No, there's a new poll just out. Now, it's likely voters, not registered voters, University of Massachusetts Lowell poll on Texas just out yesterday. Sanders 23, Biden 20, Bloomberg 18, Warren 14.
Wow. If Bernie takes Texas and California, that's pretty huge.
That's huge momentum.
Yes, that is huge.
For him.
Yes. Here's your forecast.
Finally, a break today from the rain in the southern U.S., but flooding conditions persist as rivers upstream begin to flow downward toward the Gulf. Communities can still be impacted by the risk of flooding for several days. The system providing those showers is still putting a few raindrops on I-95 from Jacksonville up to the lower Delmarva Peninsula. And we do have some snow in the eastern Carolinas, but that system again pushing offshore today and clearing out for a beautiful day across most of the country. In fact, the next big weather maker happens tomorrow with rain coming into the desert southwest and southern California. That'll put some light snow into Nevada, Utah, and Colorado. Clear and cold today in Dallas, high 49, 56 for Saturday. L.A., sunny and 73. Chicago, 38 today, warming to 49 tomorrow. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
The Bona Show.
Yeah, it is.
He's Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. It's funny because you and I forget I'm doing a radio show.
Yeah.
Right before we come on the air, I hear the music. Oh, we're coming back on. And you and I are just looking at all these different polls and doing these analyzing things. Yeah. And all of a sudden it's time to go back on the air.
I know. We're doing our own little talk show off the air.
And I just thought, as soon as it was time to turn on the microphone, I went, what am I going to say? My mind's just full of all these different things.
Well, I follow Brad Parscale on Twitter. He's the campaign manager for the president's reelection. And I'm waiting for him to put some data out on the Colorado rally in Colorado Springs. Because I don't know if it was late in the show when we talked about it yesterday, but for the Arizona rally, 67,516 tickets, 29,990 voters were identified, 87% were from Arizona, 26% didn't vote in 2016, 18% were Democrats. If you've got 1 in 4 at a rally, more than 1 in 4 at a rally that didn't vote in 2016 and they're motivated enough to get to a rally.
Yeah, and we talked about this off the air last night. I think that if that's the thing, if you're bringing people in like that, if that's any type of representation, even if it's half of that amount.
Yeah.
Let's say that half those people are motivated to go to a rally but not motivated to vote.
Right. Yeah.
But the other half are. That would be huge, especially for somebody in their second term.
Mm-hmm.
Look, one of the strengths that Trump has, and this isn't talked about much, but people, you know, the media doesn't spend a lot of time on the strengths of Trump, but the strengths of Trump are, number one, he's a known quantity. He wasn't back when he ran the first time. Nobody had any idea what he was going to do.
Right.
And that's why the never Trumpers sound like a bunch of, you know, babbling idiots.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, for example, what's his name? Bill Kristol has lost all type of credibility across the board because he just comes across as a raving lunatic now.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, when you've got the never Trumpers saying, well, OK, yes, I'd vote for Bernie instead. Well, then you were never a Republican or conservative to begin with if you're saying things like that. We've stated this before about this, you know, the president. If you take everything, if you just look at it and say, I'm going to be a critical thinker, take politics out of it. This has been a president that, yeah, when you look at the tax cuts and things like that, except for the fact that Eric and Gary have to pay more taxes under the Republican plan. Most people look at that and, you know, deregulation and going after, you know, fossil fuels and focusing on oil and natural gas production and things like that as all positives. And they give the president the credit for it. And the majority of people give the president, I saw some polling on it yesterday because of the whole, you know, was it Obama? They give the president the credit, you know, for the economy. And I think most reasonable people look at it and say, yeah, when it comes to foreign policy, you look at it and we're not in any major wars and the president's trying to do whatever he can to keep us out of major wars, but still let, terrorist countries know, Iran, that if you mess with us, we'll target your leaders.
Yes.
We will respond. Don't think that we won't respond. And so people look at that and they say, okay, it's reasonable what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not outrageous at all. It's not radical. The only thing that you could look at, and as we have said, and that's now gone because the Democrats are just pure insane.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we laugh at the over-the-top rhetoric that he can use occasionally at a rally. But outside of the rallies, he's really quite toned down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the rallies are a different animal than, for example, if you are entertaining a foreign dignitary and you have a press conference. Those all seem to be, his tone seems to be great on it. The thing about it is he's now a known quantity.
Yeah.
And so we talked about this. We when he was running. We were fearful that the president was going to be a huge protectionist.
Yeah, right.
And if you look overall, even with, Republican presidents, I'm sure you can find members of Congress who would look at it and say, no, we should just have, no free trade deals. It should be, Rand Paul, for example, or Ron Paul, when he was in office. But that's not the average even congressperson out there. Most people look at the trade deals and say, okay, a little bit of protectionist here or whatever. But basically, the USMCA is the same thing as as NAFTA. There really isn't much of a difference. 98% of it is the same. And the parts that aren't, for example, on automobiles, probably will be redone, especially when we start losing jobs, when it becomes, as it is, as we have said, too more expensive to build cars in the United States, Mexico, and Canada. That's not a good thing.
Right.
But most people aren't worried about that at all. That isn't even on. I mean, we bring it up as more of a technical thing of what you have to look at, because when you look at any free trade agreement, you and I could tear it apart. Whether it was NAFTA, we could tear it apart and say, don't like this, don't like that, don't like this, don't like that. We're not big on managed trade. And remember, these are managed trade deals. They're not free trade deals. They're managed trade deals. So you have to look at it and say, okay, compare the president to what this person thought or this president thought. And you look at it overall and you say, okay, it's quite moderate. Trump is not a radical.
No, he's not. No, he's not. And, compared to how far off the charts they've gotten, if you go back and look at clips, and you can, and sometimes this happens if you don't have your sound going and you've got autoplay on your device and you're going through social media and you see clips from the Wednesday night debate, the only one that looked normal on that stage that didn't have at some point some weird look in his eye is Mayor Pete. He's the only one. And he's not going to win. When Bernie gets going, I mean, he's angry, and the facial expressions come off as angry. That's not confident.
And Trump, for the most part, now that you are accustomed to him, he's been president for 3 years. Mm-hmm. He's more mocking than anything else.
Yeah, right.
You're not really that angry. You and I have talked about this before. That what would you be like? What would I be if I had the opposition party, if I became president and they were claiming that I was a traitor?
Yeah. And then impeach me based on nothing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'd be furious. And so I think actually the president, especially over the last year and a half, with the end of the Russia collusion and the Mueller report and everything else, I think he's been quite tempered, in his response, because I think of what would I be doing? I know the temper that that is below the surface, that can be below the surface in me. And I'm just like, I might be out of control. I'd be furious. I'd be livid. Mm-hmm. And it would be tough to hide that. When you look at the president overall, did you see the where he was with, and I don't know whether it was Daytona or before Daytona, did you see where he was with the mothers and relatives of soldiers that were lost?
Yeah.
You see how he responded there?
Yeah. Well, he made time for, all of them. And he stops and he actually has conversations with them.
He has grown into his job. If you're not full of Trump derangement syndrome, you can look at this president and say, oh, no. Yeah. I mean, even if you're a Democrat, you can say, oh, no, this guy's grown into the job. He's comfortable. He's comfortable with the job. We have thrown everything at him. And he has taken it and used it to make it a positive for him in his campaigning and a badge of honor. And you and I talked about this when the media was pounding the fact that, well, impeachment's going to be there forever. And we just sort of laughed. Nancy's still trying to sell that.
Right, yeah.
And it's going nowhere. And we said, look, don't pay attention to that. We told all of our listeners, Don't pay attention to it, because what history looks at and what reasonable people look at is not whether you're impeached. It's not whether you are found guilty of a crime either. It is the evidence that reasonable people may look at afterwards and say, no, this person was railroaded here.
Yeah,
no, right. this isn't right. It is the substance of anything that matters to people. And what the Democrats have done, and history, I believe, is what it will show, they have perverted the Constitution on impeachment. And that, I believe, will be the great history lesson that will come out of that. Think about this. And you and I mentioned this the other day. Nobody's talking about impeachment.
No.
Nancy, maybe once in a while, but she's the one closely affected because that's going to go down in history as hers.
Yes.
But nobody else is talking about impeachment. That's disappeared. That's gone.
Plus, she's drunk. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, she's saying stupid things like he wasn't acquitted.
Exactly. But no, but the narrative doesn't, it doesn't go anywhere.
No.
It doesn't stay anywhere.
No.
Look at this, by the way. Remember, it was last week, you know, the whole William Barr thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sentence comes down today. And by the way, Trump said he's not going to pardon him now because he's trying to appeal it because of the jury for him or a four person. And so the president said not going to pardon him at this time. But with the judge coming out, you know, yesterday and agreeing with the sentencing recommendations of the attorney general, as we said, remember last Friday?
Right.
Will it be gone by this Friday?
Yep.
Well, really, it would have been gone if it wasn't for the sentencing yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
so
right.
that supposed bombshell a week ago, and we said this,
mm-hmm.
will go away. And how many times does this go on? I mean, it's just now we're waiting for what's going to come out on Monday. You know, now,
right.
Oh, no. I mean, yesterday was the fact of, well, that Trump is a stooge of Russia because the intelligence or the House Intelligence Agency was briefed that Russia is for Trump.
Right.
And that's going to be gone by Saturday, or
yes.
That'll be gone by Monday.
Yes.
Then the next thing will come along, and the next thing will come along, and then and it just doesn't, nothing sticks anymore.
Well, because look at how embarrassing it is to watch the Democrats and what's going on right now.
Oh.
I mean, it really is embarrassing. And if you're the liberal media, what do you do? I don't, because Rachel Maddow gets angry that the turnout in Iowa wasn't what she thought it should be. Not enough angry people in Iowa ready to vote against Trump. You look at the possible split, a brokered convention. I mean, that's pure madness. By the way, I believe that if they get to a brokered convention, I think Bernie will still come out with a nomination, but you can't bet on that completely. I wouldn't bet on it just now.
If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to Richard in Louisville, Kentucky. Richard, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Hi. Joe Biden is a liar when he says Trump will pardon Stone as he would pardon anyone who commits a crime to support Trump. Biden is just projecting his own evil, malicious
All right,
behavior look, onto Trump.
Look, number one, don't spend a lot of energy and time on the pardons because America doesn't care. Look, after Obama pardoned, you know, and that's Biden's administration he was a part of, pardoned Chelsea Manning, the Biden and Obama, anything that they say means nothing. But pardons in general are something that is in the news for a couple of days and then disappears.
Yeah.
Don't spend a lot of energy worrying about it.
No, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
And after, like I said, when Obama, you know, pardoned Chelsea Manning, then they could never say anything about anybody else's pardons.
No.
Ever.
No. No. And again, it's not a hot topic. Nobody cares.
No.
Nobody cares about it. It's not something people are, you know, up in arms about. The media tries to make a thing about it. This is their only game right now.
Right.
You know, I saw at CNBC, President Donald Trump's longtime friend, Roger Stone, was sentenced. It's, you know, this is their game. Just throw everything at him. Nobody cares.
Don't get invested in the left's narratives.
Exactly.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE, redeyeradioshow.com. We stream live or get our app, put it on your phone, listen to us whenever you want. And thank you to the army of podcast listeners that we have.
Are they an army?
I apologize for the military reference.
No, I don't. I think they're troops. I think they're troopers. I think, yeah.
No.
No.
Armies, no matter what country they're from, just like billionaires, are immoral.
How long before we get to that?
What, that armies are immoral?
Mm-hmm.
The left's already there.
Well, no, the whole idea of we shouldn't need the military, but I mean going after the military directly. Who was it? What was it? Biden? No. Who was it? John Kerry. That said,
oh yeah,
most people only join the military because they're trying to get a free education.
Yes.
And then the troops that were in, I think it was Afghanistan, sent some pictures back of holding some posters replying. Yeah, it's because it actually is going to get that way. I'm guessing we're probably going to head that way pretty quickly. Instead of standing up and applauding them at an airport like most reasonable people would, and being grateful, it won't be far. It won't be long before they're protesting.
You know, you brought up John Kerry, and we didn't even discuss this, but it flows right into something that I was just thinking when was the last time we were here where you had a Republican president looking for a second term?
Mm-hmm.
And it was Bush
mm-hmm.
against Kerry.
Yeah, 2004.
Yeah, and I started thinking, you know, because of the president's rallies, and you and I had a discussion on this. I mean, this is really pretty unprecedented. And one of the things a president has done, which even initially on, we said, okay, you've been president for 2 months, you're holding a rally, what's this about?
Mm-hmm.
Really one of the smartest campaign things ever. They never stopped fundraising because of it.
Right.
They never stopped a ground game because they've been gathering intelligence. The president's campaign has been colluding with people in all states across, America and gathering data. You know, you and I talk about, we're waiting for the, you know, Brad Parscale, the president's campaign manager, to release all the numbers from last night's rally,
mm-hmm.
as you articulated on Arizona just before the top of the hour. But if you look at the excitement level, and you're going to see Democrats going to be out there. There'll be more excitement as you get to fewer candidates.
Yeah.
But for a second term, for a president looking for a second term, this is just unprecedented. And I started thinking about 2004 and when Bush ran against John Kerry. I remember being a local talk show host at that time. And I do remember that at that time, Sean Hannity was working for the same company as we were mm-hmm. at that time. That would have been ABC, right? Yeah. We were all at ABC Radio. We all worked for Disney at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And Sean came to town. And there was a big rally like a week before the election.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget that rally because there was probably about 5,000 people there. And it was where Sean tried to set me up with some woman who was in the audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was like, so that would be like 16 years ago. So I was in my 40s, and he's trying to set me up with this college girl. It's like, and there's 5,000 people, and he's doing it publicly.
How'd that work out?
Thank goodness it didn't. But I'll never forget, there was a lot of energy that night. And I think about that, but then I think about the topics that were going on at that time. Mm. And the topics that were really going, the big topic at that time, going back 16 years ago, was who is best to run the war on terror? Is it John Kerry? Because of the stances that he took in Vietnam.
Right.
Remember the swift boating and everything else was going on mm-hmm. also at that particular time. But the issue was who is best to run the war on terror, because it's only 2004. We're only 3 years, post 9/11.
Right.
So that was really the big issue. I remember also at that rally discussing the fact of, and we talked about this last night, John Kerry going after the NASCAR Democrat dressed in camouflage and out there, talking about the fact that he believes in the Second Amendment because he believes in hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And just what a simpleton argument that we think about that, the discussion we have today versus the simpleton imagery he was trying to portray. I'm for the Second Amendment because I'm for hunting. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, yeah.
But
it's like Michael Dukakis wearing that helmet and riding in a tank back in 88.
But think about, again, there were still differences and major differences between Democrats and Republicans. But think about it now, 16 years later. Think about somebody like Trump compared to a Bernie Sanders. And as we said earlier, Trump is a moderate, but he is somebody who has fought back and fought back successfully on a ton of different arguments of absolute substance. You didn't in 2004 have this great divide between Republicans and Democrats on the fact of we're for open borders. Anybody should be able to come in at any time. That
right.
didn't really exist. The far left was there, but the mainstream of the Democrat Party wasn't even close to being where they are today.
No, there wasn't the cultural war between the two sides.
Not like we have to. No, not even close. And so I was trying to think and compare, because I flash back to, the excitement there. And I think about it now, because what drives people are the differences of opinions that they have on issues that they hold dear. And sure, 3 years after 9/11, national security and fighting terrorism was important. But when you look at the domestic issues today, when you look and the cultural divide, which actually gets into the substance of the issues, when you look at the fact of you had a Democrat debate last night, foreign policy wasn't brought up, the economy wasn't even brought up, except for the fact of what they would do to get rid of all fossil fuels. Think about this.
Mm.
Think about the Democrats are talking about that in the next 5 to 6, 7 years. That was the discussion last night. All fossil fuels have to be gone. I mean, it's pure insanity.
Mm-hmm.
You're to the point now where you are dealing with somebody who is a moderate, and I believe the president's actually expanding his base now. And one of the reasons may not be just because the president has this wonderful personality that draws people in.
Yeah.
But that the other side is completely and totally bonkers. on issues of, what do you mean? We're not going to get rid. It's what you had from Bloomberg. We're not getting rid of capitalism.
No.
And so we had a ton of response saying, I'm glad Bloomberg said that. Well, you are because you're thinking to yourself, the Democrat Party needs a little bit of that. The Democrat Party's going, get out of here. We don't want you.
Yeah, there's full rejection of it. And there has been for years. During the Obama years, they went full on in demonizing capitalism. Trump, okay, look at Trump today. Look at the Democrats today. And now think of Obama saying something like this. If Obama were running for the first time and were on the debate stage the other night and said, you can make profits, but at some point you've made too much profit. Remember him saying that to the Chamber of Commerce that he was addressing in the Rose Garden one day. At some point you've made enough profit. Now, that wouldn't be fully acceptable in the party today. Because you can't, no, we can't have any billionaires. We don't want them making profits. Ask Elizabeth Warren. Because inevitably, if you come up with, I don't know, if they came out with something new that replaced the smartphone, right? A new device. Whoever invents that device and puts it out is going to be a billionaire. You can't stop that from happening. So taking the existing wealth is one thing. You ask an Elizabeth Warren, okay, but along the way, if you had your way, would you limit how much profit they could make? Would you limit the amount of money that they could keep? Are you going to tax them at 90, 95%? How are you going to keep them from becoming billionaires? Because wealth expansion is going to keep happening as long as innovation keeps happening.
Wealth tax.
Yes.
And that's how that. Well, because when we looked at some of the wealth tax proposals out there, well, it was 2%, and then some people had 4%, some had 5%. Well, you have a 5% wealth tax. All your wealth is gone in 20 years.
Yes. And the point is that you can't let them get there in the first place either. You can't let them become billionaires.
Well, one of the things, and this is why this, then when, think about this, the Democrats last night, that Chuck Todd asked the question, Bloomberg, should you even exist?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, think about that. Think how radical of an opinion that is. And Bloomberg, and I think the Wall Street Journal pointed this out, and I believe it was the Wall Street Journal yesterday that pointed out and said, Bloomberg was just, he just apologized really for being a billionaire instead of stating, and he should have been prepared for this, excuse me, my companies have created over the last, 40 years in this country, 1,520,000, you know, whatever jobs. The average salary has been this. That has given this much taxpayer base that, you know, we have increased wealth and helped all the, you could sit there and throw down things that would absolutely blow out of the water. And they said, look, you're still not going to get the nomination based on it.
Right.
But you would have Democrats thinking, because they said what he should be doing is, and you and I said this last night, it was interesting because that was their editorial. What he should be doing is saying, look, I'm a capitalist, but I'm for big social welfare programs. Because
mm-hmm.
Bernie Sanders is trying to make the whole case that Denmark is like what he wishes to be. And Denmark keeps saying, don't say that. We're not what you are. We have a business model that is actually considered more free than even the United States business model. It's just we have a bigger social welfare, you know, social welfare plans. Social welfare is different than government ownership of companies, which you're advocating.
Right.
And so he should
attend. And the confiscation of wealth that Warren is advocating.
And so, but when you think of the differences between even the last time we were here, which was Bush-Kerry, really, the differences of the political parties seem quite minor as compared to where they are today, which does mean that when that recognition exists out there, that there is a serious threat to people's freedom and property.
Yeah,
and they view it that way. They come out in droves. And then when you look at everything else that's happened, you know, trying to get rid of a president, trying to overturn a duly elected president and do it in a variety of ways with complete and total lies with the cooperation of the media. And then you realize that the person that you either supported wholeheartedly or half-heartedly and said, well, okay, better than the Democrats out there 4 years ago, you've now come to fully support because you're like, this is it. Mm-hmm. There's nobody out there. And this guy, it's for Trump, it's not that Trump fought back. It's that Trump has succeeded in fighting back.
Yes.
That's where it is. He's won. He has taken it, and we said this because impeachment was so bogus. If he takes impeachment as a badge of honor, it's going to help him. And he has.
Yep.
And the Democrats, nobody's talking about impeachment. This is a president that's been stained forever. Because
nope.
Everyone knows the impeachment was bogus.
Yep. If he wins big in the fall, if November 3rd he gets 52% of the vote, if it's 52-48, that's going to... I don't know. First of all, I don't know. I was talking to my dad today. How crazy will it be that night? Lock your doors. You look historically at it and how huge that will be when history looks back years from now on a win like that after all that they've thrown at him during this first term.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on preparing for 2020. Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. By now, you've probably heard about the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. It launched on January 6, 2020. Do you know how the clearinghouse affects you? Drivers who are looking for another job or have a DOT drug or alcohol violation must register on the site. It's where employers will turn for DOT drug and alcohol testing records about you. Prospective employers will go there to look at your record. You can visit the site to be sure that your information is correct, a very important aspect of the site for you. Once you register, access to the site is free. If you're subject to DOT testing, it's good to check the site to be sure your information is correct. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. We go to Jesse in Maryland. Jesse, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, what I wanted to comment on is what's been impressive to me so far through all the negativity, through all the impeachment, through story after story, is really the massive turnouts that have come out to the Republican primaries in states like Iowa and New Hampshire, the record turnouts. It just really shows that his base is just growing instead of shrinking.
I don't view the rallies as an indication of his expansion. The election will decide that. You will know that by the election, because he's always had this kind of turnout. This kind of turnout. It's not like he's increased the number of people at the rallies, even though you may be able to say that the people waiting to get tickets have increased.
The overflow. Well, the overflow.
You may be able. You can make that argument that the overflow is probably greater than before.
Well, and the demographics and data have changed too in terms of who's going to the rallies right now. So that could be an indicator.
I'm talking about the actual primary, how the Democrats have the caucus in Iowa. the primary for the Republican Party. They even though he's the incumbent.
In Iowa, yes. Yeah, you can absolutely say that. Okay. Yes, that's voting.
No, that's voting. Yep. That's showing up. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Sorry, we mistook that. Yep. Showing up at the polls when he's the guy is, you know, that is something, because there's really not a primary. That is something that could be an indicator long-term of turnout in the fall.
I'm not surprised, though, because of everything he's been through. That's the draw.
Oh, yeah.
The draw is he's been through all this.
Oh, yeah.
These unfair allegations and the lies from the Democrats and survived.
Right.
Pure Chaos, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, end of the week here, so if you want to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE, tell us what you're thinking. You know, the last call talking about how impressive it is, you know, not just the rally, but he was talking about the actual voting, for example, in Iowa and mm-hmm. and New Hampshire for the president, and mm-hmm. and how it's above what has happened before with other presidencies, and the excitement that seems to exist out there. Not just excitement, but I think there's excitement, there's passion, there's anger, there's a critical thinking, I think, analysis also that exists out there from many people in this country saying, what are we facing? And, you know, what is our best choice?
Right.
And I think I think that they're making that critical thinking choice and then becoming extremely passionate about it.
Right.
And driven to do something about it, which is you get out there and you vote. But I was just thinking about this. And this is just a ton of different thoughts out there, and you can respond. I was just thinking, do you think that, because I'm tending to think that since impeachment, the passion to support this president has risen to a level that people have come to a finality of a decision, an absolute conclusion that this is the guy? And I say this, I remember, I think it was Peggy Noonan who wrote right after the allegations came out of the promise and then the quid pro quo and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, the problem is that not whether the president did this, but people believe he could do this.
Right.
And you and I responded to that column, and I believe it was Peggy Noonan. If it wasn't, I apologize. But I thought that was her who wrote that. And I said, well, the problem with that is, I think just the opposite. Everything that's been thrown at this president has shown to be false. If you have come to that conclusion, it's because you've bought into the mainstream media narrative.
Right. Yeah.
If you've been paying attention to the actual facts,
right.
Well, you haven't come to that conclusion. I'm not saying that she isn't right, that doesn't exist, because it existed in her. You know, because she was thinking that and wrote that. But now after impeachment, was that the final nail that shut the door on people, on a significant portion of the population saying, well, maybe Trump is dirty. Maybe he is dirty. Maybe. And finally you come to the impeachment and you're like, this is all just bogus.
Well, you know, the problem with the idea of hanging a cloud over the president's head, and we knew that they would do this, that they were going to do this all the way up to November, but I mean, this goes back a few years. You just, this cloud of doubt. Well, at some point that cloud is going to clear. At some point there's the whole thing is going to, it's just going to collapse. It's going to come down. It's going to go away, because they overplayed it. They couldn't help themselves. It'd be one thing if they went through, if there was no special prosecutor assigned, but they kept talking about it. And then they won the House in 2018, and then the committees investigated, right? And they just keep talking about it. And we and keep looking at it going, wow, this looks pretty impeachable. Wow, this looks pretty impeachable. Just walking up to that line. Well, the problem with that is that even that gets old. Even that becomes the boy crying wolf. So there's no way to hang that cloud of doubt if you have nothing. They could have probably had a better chance of not having this backlash if they didn't go to impeachment, if they didn't go to special prosecutor. Because if you look at the way those two things ended, I mean, it was just, this was, if it was planned, it was horribly planned. It was not well thought out. The way that the special prosecutor, Mueller, the day he was testifying and was all over the place, and it was just, it was horribly embarrassing. You look at the arguments and the House impeachment hearings, and the witnesses just, their entire narrative on the left just dissolving once anyone got a chance to cross-examine. I mean, it just went nowhere. You know, the political game of creating, you know, that, oh man, he's kind of a, that guy's kind of a, you know, seedy person, and just suggesting that has been around for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not new.
They went full on. They went full bore, and they failed. And what they have done is they've re-vetted the president. This is almost like a re-vetting process.
And that's what I wanted to get to, because you said that during the bottom of the hour, and I thought, wow, that's a great point. This president hasn't been vetted just once when he ran for president.
No.
He was vetted twice.
Yes.
He was vetted during Russia collusion.
Yes.
And he was vetted again during impeachment. And
right.
People went, oh, wait a minute. He's not you. You people are the ones that are showing that you're the true radicals. You're the ones that are showing you will do anything to win. In fact, what we're finding out is all the accusations you're making against the president, abuse of power, for example, as we said, you want abuse of power?
Right.
Look what Congress did on impeachment.
Right.
And they can't win the argument on both articles of impeachment, but it's the second article, which obviously to anybody who was educated on the Constitution to begin with knows is completely and totally bogus. By the way, I think it's important to know that here we are to February.
Mm-hmm.
And since the House finished their hearings, we haven't had anybody call, not one, would try to. We had a couple of people try, but they were off on the facts to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody has tried to argue the facts of either article of impeachment. And if they have, they've tried to argue the first one. They've got the facts wrong, but they've tried to argue the first one with the facts wrong. But nobody has ever brought to us the facts of the actual case and tried to make a case for impeachment on both of them. And no one has ever tried on the second article ever.
Right.
To even attempt to argue that, because it's simply that's a constitutional issue.
Right.
And if you're somebody who knows the Constitution at all, and you understand on the second article of impeachment that every Democrat senator voted to remove a president from office, to overturn a presidential election based on the fact that the president said, I've got my constitutional rights, which we all know that he has, to go to the courts to settle any dispute between the executive branch and the legislative branch, and every single Democrat senator said he should be removed from office for that, because each article is separate.
Right.
Each article stands on its own.
Right.
So if you want to know how radical the Democrat Party is, understand that. How many times have we said that? Has anybody attempted, if you got an email, anybody attempted to debate you on that?
No, because you can't.
Nothing. You can't do it. It's that obvious to people. And if it's that obvious to the two idiots overnight, it's that obvious to all of you out there. And you just said, that's it.
Right.
This party, this Democrat Party, and this is when we start talking about socialism and communism and fascism. Who has that mindset? The mindset exists in every single Democrat senator.
Yes.
Who voted on that second article of impeachment without question. That is the biggest 100% slam dunk argument that they don't believe in the Constitution of the United States because they wish to overturn a presidential election based on a president saying, I've got my constitutional rights too. And the Constitution dictates that the executive branch and the legislative branch settle disputes through the courts.
Right.
That's my ultimate argument. You're saying I get removed from office for doing so. You want a fascist mindset? You want an un-American mindset? Right there. And as I said last week and I said the week before, I dare anybody to attempt to argue that point with us. You can't. You'll lose every time because you've got nothing.
Well, this is, again, this is the point of looking at the process right now. Bloomberg's just now being vetted, right?
Yeah.
You look at the president, and there's still some vetting going on with, you know, a number of the candidates, really not Bernie, but, you know, a few others, if the media even cares to vet them. But look at this president. He's been vetted and revetted and revetted. Because each of those challenges, each of those is a vetting process. It is a loser every single time.
The other side has been vetted too.
Hmm.
Through this whole process because of the truth, like I said.
Oh, in terms of who they really are and how they think.
Of who they really are and who they think. They've been vetted completely.
Well, they're on record. They weren't wagging. It wasn't political, you know, back and forth. It wasn't Adam Schiff saying, well, we're looking into the Russia collusion thing and we're going to, as a committee, we're going to keep looking into that. No. They got a special prosecutor. They assigned a special prosecutor to this and it went nowhere for them. And even the hearing, as empty as that whole thing was to begin with, the hearing was the only way. When Mueller testified, that was the only way that was going to end. It was bound to be a botched testimony by Mueller because it was a botched attempt from the beginning. And the same thing with impeachment. If the Democrats lose big in the fall, they'll have themselves to blame. Trump's got the energy, but he's getting a ton of the energy from the opposition. They're sending him voters. I can't wait to see how many on November 3rd.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We go to Mike in Seattle. Mike, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yeah, impeachment, it wasn't even brought up in that debate, was it?
No.
No,
it's
not
that. It's
just
like,
one.
What happened, you know, that stall tactic that they've used to, and these rallies, they will not show the crowd. The president asked them to. They will not do it, and there's... You know, the fans, to go to a rally, I mean, after a long day at work, I mean, to cut that out of your schedule, I mean, these people, they're incredible because it takes every ounce of energy after you're helping your family all day long to go to a rally, you know, and then on top of that, you know, Pelosi always said, if this is a republic, if you can keep it, she is mocking us because we've almost lost our country because of people like her, and now she's telling us, if you can keep it. Like, in other words, I'm determined to ruin this country. It's just disgusting.
Well, just the sound of your voice shows the passion that we're talking about right now.
Right.
Actually, as we said after the impeachment vote was taken,
the Constitution won that day.
Yeah. Yeah.
No doubt, no doubt. Look at it maybe a little bit differently. The Constitution won. Mm-hmm. If you ever want an understanding why we need to keep the Constitution, for the most part, the way that it is, I don't see any major changes that are needed in our Constitution. That is it. If you understand the Constitution, the three branches of government, you understand that it worked.
Yeah.
It's funny because it was the separation of powers mindset, that is the reason that the Constitution won, the separation of powers mindset from the founding fathers. To right. not allow the concentration of power in one particular branch of government, and that's what won after the impeachment vote was taken. Mm-hmm. So it was actually a day, as we said, of celebration of the Constitution, a Constitution that the Democrats wished to dismantle, from everything from free speech to freedom of religion to the Second Amendment to due process to the Electoral College to the Senate. And so understand, as we've said before, people always get upset. Democrats, don't call me un-American. I'm not un-American. And we've said, fine, if you don't like that, then please respond when you wish to dismantle the basic tenets of the Constitution of the United States. Define to us. Tell us what you are then.
Exactly. Yeah. How do you see this country? And what Constitution would you have?
Right. And what defines you as an American if you believe that the major tenets of the Constitution don't matter,
right,
and should be gone?
Right.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thank you so much for being here this morning.
We do appreciate it.
So, see the story?
Which one?
Elizabeth Warren reverses her position on super PAC support. She reverses her position on rejecting super PAC support as she seeks a comeback in the Democratic presidential primary. That's why we said big money, small money, money is involved in all of it.
Yeah, of course.
If you're a serious candidate for president, that's just the reality of politics today. They all try to jump on this and say, well, no, I'm not going to take it. Well, I'm desperate. Now I'm going to take it. But I'm only taking it because I'm desperate.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No. What I meant to say was, please help me, super PACs.
Yes.
Here's the other side of that, Bernie. Going after Mayor Pete for his billionaire donors. Well, the DNC has a ton of billionaire donors. You're looking to be the nominee, and you know that, Bernie. You know that. Warren Buffett's going to give to the DNC, I'm sure. What if Warren Buffett writes Bernie a check? Bill Gates. Jeff Bezos writes him a check. Oh, my gosh, that would be funny.
All right, so here we go. Political. You ready for this?
All right.
Mike Bloomberg is privately lobbying Democratic Party officials and donors allied with his moderate opponents to flip their allegiance to him and block Bernie Sanders in the event of a brokered national convention. The effort, largely executed by Bloomberg's senior state-level advisors in recent attempts, this is from Politico, attempts to prime Bloomberg for a second ballot contest at the Democratic National Convention in July by poaching supporters of Joe Biden and other moderate Democrats, according to two Democratic strategists familiar with the talks and unaffiliated with Bloomberg. The outreach has involved meetings and telephone calls with supporters of Biden and Pete Buttigieg
as well as uncommitted DNC members in Virginia, Texas, Florida, Oklahoma, and North Carolina, according to one of the strategists who participated in meetings and calls. There you go. With Sanders' emergence as the front runner in the presidential primary, Democrats in those states have recently raised the prospect that the Democratic Socialist could be the top of the ticket liability. There's a whole operation going on, which is genius, said one of the strategists who was unaffiliated with any campaign, and it's going to help them win on the second ballot. They're telling them that's their strategy.
Yeah. Good luck. Good luck with that. Can you imagine that an effort like that would be successful?
I don't rule anything out, but you would have a huge split.
It would be massive.
Right.
Well, I mean, if anybody but Bernie becomes a nominee, if Bernie shows up with a plurality, then there's going to be a split.
Here it is from thehill.com. The Democrats are having second thoughts about Mike Bloomberg after he fell flat in his debate stage debut. Before Wednesday night's performance, which Democrats across the board labeled terrible and pathetic, many in the party were hopeful the former New York City mayor would emerge as a strong competitor to frontrunner Bernie Sanders, who continues to gain momentum. But Bloomberg's debate implosion left a lot to be desired. I don't think I've ever seen someone look worse in a debate, said one Democratic strategist who was a veteran of presidential campaigns. Sometimes it seems like he wasn't on stage. Sometimes he seemed out of touch. Sometimes he seemed like he hadn't prepped. It was a combination of bad. Democratic strategist Christy Stetzer said it just goes to show that having unlimited money and the most talented team in the world doesn't matter if you refuse to do basic preparation. That's how it read to me, that Bloomberg believed he was above preparation, even on the most obvious lines of attack. No wonder best student in class, Senator Elizabeth Warren, utterly crushed him, Stetzer added. During the debate, Warren pummeled Bloomberg, painting him as a misogynist and an out-of-touch billionaire. Democrats are not going to win if we have a nominee who has a history of during his tax returns. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. Has a history of during doing his tax returns? I don't know if it says during. Of harassing women and of supporting racist policies like redlining and stop and frisk, the Massachusetts senator said during the debate. Democrats take a huge risk if we just substitute one arrogant billionaire for another. Stetzer added that Warren's demolishment of Bloomberg was so complete, we may have set ourselves up for the nightmare scenario. Sanders grabs the Democratic nomination, and an embarrassed, bitter Bloomberg instead runs third party. Think about that one.
Well,
think about that one. If Sanders wins, does Bloomberg run third party?
Well, because Bloomberg would have to know that that's a losing bet. He's only going to be the spoiler for the left.
Again, let's talk about arrogance.
Yes.
Would you spend $400 million and be as unprepared as he was?
No, I'd buy 400 million scratch-off tickets. I have a better chance of winning.
If you're truly greedy, that's what you do. You take 400 million that you have in cash and you buy lottery tickets
that's,
out of it.
That's right.
That is, as we have said before, the definition of greed.
Well,
and that was done by the woman in Dallas a few years back who embezzled from her company $250,000 and then bought lottery tickets with the $250,000 that she embezzled.
But I'd still win more than Bloomberg's going to win.
Well, look, we've talked about arrogance that politicians can have, an ego that they have.
Mm-hmm.
You spend $400 million.
Yeah.
And you walk into a debate absolutely clueless as to the party that you wish to be the nominee for.
Mm.
Clueless and unprepared as to what the attacks are going to be at you. Right? Did he?
Yep.
Am I wrong in analyzing that in any way?
No. 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 You know, they talked about the mock debates that he supposedly engaged in. No, he didn't. He hired the wrong people.
They were mock.
Well, he was mocked. That's the problem. It was a mock debate. Don't have a mock debate. And there is the arrogance, though, because I don't put it past Mike Bloomberg to believe that he could beat Trump and Bernie, that he could be as an independent. He could win. The only thing he would do is he would spoil from Bernie. It's the only thing. That's it. Now, if Mike Bloomberg spends $1 billion and keeps Bernie Sanders out of the White House, I will buy a ticket to fly to where he is and shake his hand and thank him personally. But he's not going to win. He's only going to be the spoiler. If he got 5% of the vote, I'd be amazed.
Who gets 5% of the vote?
Bloomberg as an independent.
Okay.
On November 3rd.
Okay. All right. Okay.
If he got 5%, right. I'd be amazed.
Right.
But if you're a moderate Democrat, what do you do?
I could see, what's my reference point? I'm thinking, he could get 9. He could get 9 or 10 or 11. He might even pull in the teens.
Mm. That's only the anti-Bernie vote. That's all that could be.
Yeah.
Because Bloomberg is radical in his own way.
Because if you look at the Democrats out there, I mean, Bernie's polling, roughly, if you look at it, anywhere between 20% and 30%. If you take Warren's votes, he may have between 30% and 40%. Okay?
Yeah.
So that means you've got 60% of Democrats that Bernie is not their first choice, even though he might be their second or third choice. So the possibility of pulling in the teens, as an independent, maybe. Except for the fact that they would know, that every voter would know, that they're electing Trump by doing so. And if Bernie is there, see, I don't know. I don't think, I'm guessing here, I'm guessing the liberals that support Bernie Sanders are not wishy-washy. They want Bernie. They don't want a Bloomberg.
Right.
I don't know how wishy-washy, because I do think there are a significant portion of Democrats that don't like where their party is going, but don't want to go to Trump.
Well, here's one thing. Bloomberg was a popular mayor. You and I were talking about this during a break. You get to New York, which is in April. Bloomberg could take New York. That's a chunk of delegates. We'll know before then. But the problem is that keeps it closer to the Nate Silver forecast where it is right now. That keeps it closer to that brokered convention. Think about that. Right now we're at a 42 or 43% chance? 42% chance of a brokered convention. That we're edging closer to a 50-50 chance of a brokered convention.
Mm-hmm.
You get to that point. Okay, you had Bloomberg pick up 3 more congressional endorsements. They're not big names. But he has 15 now members of Congress. He's only Biden, I think, has more. But Bernie has the most powerful because he has AOC.
See, I think the Democrats are, this is what the Democrats are hoping.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my theory. Hey, it's a Friday. We can have fun, right?
We can do that.
We can have fun here. The thing is they want Sanders to win. They want Sanders to win the nomination. They know that Sanders can't beat Trump. But then if Sanders wins the nomination and Bloomberg is third party, then that means that Trump does not win 50% of the vote. And that's the one thing that they want, is for him not to win the popular vote. And then they can say he's not a legit president. And that's about the best they can do.
Well, yeah, exactly. And I don't, again, there is, I mean, you look at it. You look at the delegate layout. I mean, Super Tuesday will be big. The rest of March will be huge. But then you get to New York. When you get to New York, I really think that Bloomberg has a shot at winning New York. It's probably the only state he'll win if
he
wins.
And we don't know, because the last polling that was done on New York was
November.
Yeah. Then the next, but so they haven't done, and that isn't what till the 28th or 23rd, the 23rd, I think, of April.
Yeah.
That primary is, so that's sort of late in the
April 28th.
I wonder if New York Democrats are upset about that, because by that time it could be already be decided, or not decided. You know, it's just who has more influence in a brokered convention.
Well, because I mean, right now, again, we go back to Nate Silver's forecast, and Bernie right now is forecast to have, there's an 80% chance he'll have roughly 1,555 delegates. He needs 19. Well, all of them, any of them, need 1,991. Going into the convention to be the presumptive nominee. Otherwise, it's brokered. And I don't see how the party deals with that if there is that going on, the wheeling and dealing with the superdelegates on the super count or on the second count, on the second vote. I don't know what you do if you're a Bloomberg, how much leverage. But there is a split in the party. You got the people like Carville and others that are saying you can't go full-on communist.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So there you go, that political article that started this entire discussion. And that is on the fact that Bloomberg is already preparing. His whole strategy is based on a brokered convention.
Right.
And Bernie getting the most votes. And already early on, this early on, and you know, trying to influence people and saying, you know, I'm the best choice. Mm. You made a great point. We're going to know about a brokered convention.
Yeah, for weeks ahead of the convention itself.
Exactly.
Heck, you could look at because if by that time, if you get beyond, you get to the end of March, we'll start seeing some of the data coming in on polls in New York. I mean, that's I think the last big state, one of the last big states.
Mm-hmm.
So we could know for a couple of months before the convention.
I know.
And that will be the story.
I know.
Because now the media is going to be in Tom Perez's face. Dude, what are you going to do?
Just so everybody knows, all of our listeners know, Eric already last week checked to make sure that when the Democrat convention is on that week, it is summertime,
that we're not
that,
off,
that we will not be on vacation.
We will not be on vacation.
We can't miss that.
We will not miss that.
we could actually miss the Republican. We're not. I don't believe we are. But we could miss a Republican convention and wouldn't be
right,
because we know what the result of that's going to be. Right.
Right. Exactly.
There is no. But we won't miss that week either. So
no.
But there you. wow.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the insanity if that happens? And here's the thing: it's not as if, because remember, a brokered convention was even being talked about at this time with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Remember?
Yeah.
And of course it didn't happen, but this is actually, the odds keep increasing based on the number of people that are still left, that may be left, that will be left, we believe, all the way through Super Tuesday and then all the way through March.
Yeah.
And again, could it change if everybody drops out and it's Bloomberg and just after Super Tuesday, if it's just Bloomberg and Sanders? Yeah. Is that likely to happen? No. Biden going to pull out?
No, Biden's not going to pull out. I don't think Warren's going to pull out. I don't think Mayor Pete's going to pull out because Mayor Pete's getting money. You stay in it. You stay in it through March anyway. Because there are other contests. March is a huge. Let's see. Let's see if I can pull that up. I mean, it's a ton of Super Tuesday has 1,357 delegates up for grabs. The rest of March, March 4th through the 31st, has another nearly 1,100, 1,091. And then beyond that, it's like 1,270 between April through the end of June. So it's quite possible we will know at the end of March because we'll start seeing some polls on New York by then. Here's your forecast.
Finally, a break today from the rain in the southern U.S., but flooding conditions persist as rivers upstream begin to flow downward toward the Gulf. Communities can still be impacted by the risk of flooding for several days. The system providing those showers is still putting a few raindrops on I-95 from Jacksonville up to the lower Delmarva Peninsula. And we do have some snow in the eastern Carolinas, but that system, again, pushing offshore today and clearing out for a beautiful day across most of the country. In fact, the next big weather maker happens tomorrow with rain coming into the desert southwest and southern California. That'll put some light snow into Nevada, Utah, and Colorado. Clear and cold today in Dallas, high 49, 56 for Saturday. L.A., sunny and 73. Chicago, 38 today, warming to 49 tomorrow. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by the TruckSmart mobile app from Travel Centers of America. Download TruckSmart today to get what you need when you need it.
The Bona Show.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Sometimes we get some really interesting correspondence that's really worth talking about. Got this in that said, Sanders will win because of health care. That Sanders will win in November because of health care. There is no evidence that shows that at the moment.
No.
I don't know any evidence.
No.
Forget about my personal feelings. One of the problems that Bernie is having selling Medicare for all is the fact that a significant portion of Democrats don't like Medicare for all. They don't mind a public option, but to take away health care. Look, that's the problem he's having right now with the unions.
Yeah.
He can't get support of the unions because the unions are saying, we got great health care and you want to put us on Medicare?
Right.
That's not a good selling point. So you may wish that or you may think that, but there is no evidence, polling or otherwise, and I guess the only evidence would be polling. What are people saying? The big problem with Bernie Sanders is he's saying everybody goes on it.
Yeah, and you would outlaw private health care.
Right.
That's not that is far too radical, even for the far left, for some on the far left. He's far, far left. AOC is far, 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 far left. I'm trying to measure how far it goes. You know, it's linear. It doesn't come back around. You know, it's not like, you know, if you got on a plane and you could fly around the planet
to the left of Lenin.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You like that?
But much further.
To the left of Lenin.
Yes.
So far left to the left of Lenin, I'm telling you.
Well, it is, but it's, you know, that idea you're not going to be able to sell politically. It's to the middle,
to
the people that you need to win.
And to the unions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can't, mm-hmm. That's the problem. If you can't sell it to the unions,
mm-hmm.
then you can't sell it to the country.
You know, Warren was talking to the culinary union in Las Vegas, and I thought they chose not to endorse. They're not endorsing anyone. I think it's Nevada's largest union, I think. And you look at that dynamic. She said something like, something to the effect, I know that when you workers have a mess, you need to clean it up, and you get a woman in there to clean it up. Did she just say woman's place is in the kitchen?
Hey, my first job was cleaning toilets and cleaning the kitchen.
Uh-huh.
That was my first job, my first real job with a real paycheck.
Right.
I mean, I don't count being a paper boy.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that was work, wasn't it?
What?
When I was a paper boy.
Well, yeah, it was work.
Yeah. So that technically was my first job then.
I quit after one Sunday. This is too much work.
You know, when I was at my parents' house a couple of weeks ago, my brother comes over and goes, I brought in the Saturday or the Sunday paper.
Yeah.
I'm like, where? He goes, right there. And I'm, my stack of papers for my show is thicker than this thing. I mean, right. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, back in the day, remember the Sunday paper? Had 5 million coupons.
For us, it used to be the Saturday evening because there were two newspapers at that point. And it was a Saturday evening paper before the Sunday edition came out. So there were actually like two Sunday editions because they were all.
Yeah.
I think we had like 120 on our route. And my brother and I did it together.
Yeah, right.
Well, you have 120 newspapers.
Did you do that in a car or bicycle?
We did it with a wagon.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Little red wagon that we pulled around.
Wow.
And I would...
You walked?
Yes. 120, wow. 120 homes. It's about 5 or 6 streets.
Okay. Not too bad.
And we would, you know, put it, you know, load it up in... And some luckily, we would have to do it twice. We'd fill up twice because Sunday we didn't have room for it.
Yeah.
Or we had to get two wagons to do it because it was just too much.
You know, one of the...
It was like 4 or 5 inches thick.
One of the things I learned to hate is when they would drop off the bundle at your house. You know, drop it off on your sidewalk or your driveway, whatever. Because you had to be up. You had to make sure that you were going to be up and then ready to roll the paper, put it in plastic if it was going to rain, or rubber band if it wasn't going to rain.
Yeah, and ours were delivered to a central spot.
Okay.
You had to go get them. We had to go get them.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And the house was in the middle of the 6 streets, I think, that we did. And it was an evening paper.
Mm-hmm.
So it came out, we could do it after school.
Oh, okay.
So we were able to do it after school.
Oh, that's good.
My brother and I would have ever delivered the morning paper.
Yeah.
Because there was a morning paper and an evening paper.
Yeah.
When we were growing up. So the evening paper is what we delivered. And so Saturday afternoon was also the big one.
I did the Del Rio Herald, News Herald, I think I think they're still called the Herald.
There were two newspapers that existed at that time, and it was the Courier Express, this was in Buffalo, New York, which was the morning edition, or was the morning paper, and they were separate companies. And then the Buffalo News, which still exists today, which it was the evening newspaper, but now they're a morning newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now it's interesting now.
Did you have to go to the door and get checks? I did.
The reason we didn't, it's funny, because when my brother and I did it, and the funny thing is we did it probably for about 6 months and found out we could make more money in a quicker time without putting as much doing yards.
Right.
Doing yards. So we actually switched. So we actually were subcontracting for another guy who collected all the money.
Oh, interesting.
We were subcontractors for the guy who
did it. So one person paid you.
Yes.
That's much better.
Yes. We didn't have to go and
collecting was horrible. That's ultimately what got me to quit, not the work. Nobody's home again.
That's why when I went to college, I worked in banking, and I worked for a couple of years in bill collection, and then in customer service. But in customer service, we worked evening customer service, and this was for basically for HSBC.
Mm-hmm.
But for the, I think they'd, I don't know if they'd become, if they had given up their Marine Midland that they used to be in New York State, but HSBC is what we work for. And when I was, my like last 6 months before I was, you know, graduating from college, they wanted me, because at night we were our own supervisors. We had no, so we were considered supervisory rank because we worked alone.
Right.
And we had, and we did crazy things because it was me and just my buddy Jerry, who I still know today, who I visit in Florida all the time,
right,
who might be listening right now because a lot of times he's up at this time.
Right.
And he asked me the other day, he said, do you ever tell people on the radio what you used to do? And I said, yeah, I told them I climbed my last day from the 14th floor elevator shaft to the 13th floor. It was a 40-story building. Still exists today, but not a bank anymore. But I climbed down and I etched my initials. Gary McNamara was here. Into the wall of the elevator shaft. Because you're insane. And I was insane. But we used to have games all the time. We used to have, you know, because nobody was up on this floor. Nobody was there. We used to have every sort of game known to mankind where we would, for example, sit in those roller chairs and push ourselves and time ourselves running around, you know, with a stopwatch, who could do it. And we had a lot of free time on our hands. But forgetting about all those things that we did in our youth, when it came to, they wanted me to, hey, we want you to be in the management trainee program. I don't want to be a banker. And because I realized banking is one thing, lending and collecting. Yeah. But the most important part is collecting.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have to do that. I didn't want to do that, just like you. Mm-hmm. To get back to your story, that's what you hated the most, was collecting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's
because it was door to door. You know, no auto, debit, nothing. Nothing, Becky.
Right. There was
nothing. No, it had to be a check.
Now, did you work during the holidays as a paper boy? Did you get tips?
No, I didn't work during the holidays.
Okay.
I only did it about 3 or 4 months. It was summertime.
You and I weren't cut out to be paper boys, were we?
No. No. No, I.
And do kids even do that anymore? Or is it all adults in cars?
I think it's mostly adults in cars now. Yeah.
Because it was all, I mean, I'll never forget showing up and it was, there'd be, I don't know, 25 kids sitting outside this garage and they would drop all these bundles were there. And
you know what's a new thing now for teenagers? Some. It's not, I don't know if it's trending, how much it's trending, but it is happening. Working with mom or dad. In doing DoorDash. So you help deliver the meals. DoorDash or Uber Eats or you know, any of the meal delivery things. So they go along. They, you know, they want to work, but the parents don't like them, you know, going house to house or something like that. And I'm guessing they split the funds. I don't know how it works. Or they don't have their own car. But I've noticed that a few times in ordering myself. That there are two people, and often it's a younger person. It's a teenager.
See, I've never done that yet.
Mm-hmm.
I've never done Uber Eats.
Yeah.
I've done Uber a ton of times. I've just never.
Yeah, DoorDash is a favorite of mine.
Yeah, I've just never. I don't know why I've never done it. I've just never done it.
Yeah. It's so much easier because you think about the money you spend, even though it's more expensive. If you're going to go to a restaurant now, the problem is that the food's not going to be often isn't going to be the same because they're going to make multiple. They might make multiple stops on the way, especially on a Friday or Saturday night in a large metro area, especially, that becomes problematic. And it's happened a few times where it's been I waited a long time for my food and it got there and it was cold. Complain, got a credit. They gave me they offered whatever it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, partial credit. It wasn't a full refund.
Does it get taken out from the driver?
I don't know. Not sure. But they have those, you know, the bags, the heat bags.
Right.
They're supposed to put them in. They don't always do that.
You know, I'll tell you though, since, you know, it's almost 4 years ago where I got my type 2 diet.
type 2 diabetes diagnosis, so I really don't order pizzas anymore. I mean, it's just, so I really, a lot of the stuff to get delivered, it's just, you just don't do it anymore because I will splurge once in a while, but it's like you can't do it once. I don't even splurge once a week, maybe once a month.
Right.
I do it, but it's not a pizza normally. So, yeah, those are the, you know, I haven't had Chinese food in 4 years.
Wow. There's probably some that's low carb. You'd have to skip the rice.
The rice and noodles.
Yeah.
That's what I love.
Yeah.
That's what I love the most. And all the, you know, all the coating on the chicken and stuff like the sweet and sour chicken, the breading and all that. Nope, can't have. So.
Yeah. But there are some that are the meats where the meats are low carb and there's no breading. I mean, you have to look for it.
But I don't like that. Right. Chinese.
Yeah, you like the sweet stuff.
I like all the sweet stuff, and when you see the amount of carbs, it's like, oh, that's my heroin. I better not have that. So
yeah, I love it,
and I hate to be disciplined.
Splurge.
See, now I'm all bummed out.
Exactly.
I may do it one of these days. That will be it. All right, I'm just going to order Chinese today. I'll raise my blood sugar one day, and that's it.
That's it. Right.
But I'm just going to splurge. I do deserve a splurge on Chinese, don't I?
Why not? It's great.
I gotta have Chinese.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. What did that listener say?
Got a tweet from a listener. Let me see if I can pull it back up.
He's Eric. I'm Gary, by the way.
Yeah, hi. Hi, how you doing?
Blah, blah, blah. That's who we are.
Eric, I think you and Gary are looking at it all wrong about Bloomberg running third party. Does he keep more of his money under a Trump win or a Bernie socialist win? He runs third party just to keep Bernie from winning. I actually touched on that and said, look, if he spends $1 billion and keeps Bernie from winning, I'll gladly thank him for that. But he's not going to win. That's our point. He's not going to win.
Right. Well, I don't think at this point Bloomberg cares about his money.
No. No.
He's just spent $400 million. Mm-hmm. He cares. Look, when you've got money, there are things that that normally you don't think you can buy, and he thinks he can buy it. He's trying to buy a presidency is what he's trying to do. That's his major focus, number one. Now, maybe if he knows he can't win, then maybe he would try to do anything to defeat Sanders, if that's your point, so he can save money under a Trump administration. I don't think he's really bothered by that, though, at this point in his life.
No, I don't think so.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.